Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. We're Marine today here in the Courage Handy Ham system. The February 2011 issue of World Radio Online in digest format. World Radio is a publication of CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. The editor, Richard Fisher, KI6SN, and the editorial director, Richard S. Mawson, W2VU. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at Area 763-520-0512. Or at email address handyham@courage.org. The website www.handyham.org. Let's start right out with World Radio Online News Front. Long delayed echoes copied on 7 MHz during a CQ Worldwide DX contest. A German radio amateur has reported the phenomenon known as long delayed echoes while operating on 40 meters November 27. During the 2010 CQ Worldwide CW DX contest, Peter Brogel, DK6NP of Firth, Germany, at first thought someone was playing tricks on him. The space weather website reported when he heard a carbon copy of his signal 46 seconds later. So he changed frequency. After resending his call sign, he heard the echo again. A geomagnetic storm was occurring at the time. For more than an hour, Brogel heard the echoes, allowing him time to make several recordings. Long-delayed echoes were first reported in 1927 by Norwegian civil engineer Jørn Hals, but happened rarely and are not really understood, according to a report on Amateur Radio Newsline. Most researchers believe that unusual propagation conditions linked to solar storms may be one of many possible explanations. That really hot item was from Amateur Radio Newsline, Space Weather, and Southgate News. K7JA, named to advertising and marketing post at CQ Communications. Charles H. Chip Margellis, call K7JA, has been appointed Director of Advertising and Sales and Marketing for CQ Communications Incorporated. It was announced by the company president and publisher Richard Ross, K2MGA. Chip is responsible for advertising sales for CQ Amateur Radio, CQ VHF, Popular Communications, and of course this magazine, World Radio Online, as well as marketing efforts for all CQ Communications products. He succeeds Don Allen, W9CW, which is CQ, and CQ VHF Advertising Manager, and Arnie Spassato, N2IQO, Popular Communications Advertising Manager, both of whom retired at the end of 2010, and John Comer, WA2OJK, who coordinated advertising sales for World Radio Online. Chip brings to CQ more than 3 decades of experience in the amateur radio industry, including nearly 30 years with Yaesu, now Vertex Standard, and more recently 4 years with Heel Sound. He is fluent in Japanese, German, Spanish, of course, as well as English. An active ham for more than 45 years, Chip is known worldwide as a champion contester, DXer, and DXpeditioner. He is currently active on all amateur bands from 1.8 through 1300 MHz and is a 2008 inductee into the CQ Amateur Radio Hall of Fame. Chip and his wife Janet, KL7MF, live in Garden Grove, California. Outside of amateur radio, Chip enjoys photography and astronomy and is a marathon runner. Here's a quotation, "I am absolutely thrilled to be joining the CQ Communications organization," Chip says. The CQ family of action-packed magazines is widely respected throughout the world of amateur radio and shortwave listening, and to be a part of this dynamic communications group is the opportunity of a lifetime. Publisher Richard Ross continued by saying, "As we welcome Chip, we sadly say farewell and thank you to both Don Allen and Arnie Spassato." Don and Arnie each have represented all three of our publications over the course of their many years at CQ. Their combined knowledge of the industry and of the people behind the nameplates is unparalleled, and we will miss them greatly. We wish them both only the best in retirement. Continuing on Newsline, new general class question pool released. Prospective general class amateur radio licensees taking their exam in July this year or later have a new pool of examination questions to contend with. The Question Pool Committee, QPC, of the National Conference of Volunteer Examiner Coordinators released the new general class, that's Element 3, question pool in early December. It becomes effective for all general class examinations administered on or after July 1, 2011, and will remain valid until June 30, 2015. The current general question pool that became effective July 1, 2007 will expire June 30, 2011. The new general pool, including graphics and diagrams, contains 457 questions, from which 35 are selected for an Element 3 examination. The current technician class question pool that was effective July 1, 2010 is valid through June 30, 2014. The current amateur extra class pool that was effective July 1, 2008 is valid until June 30, 2012. That commentary is from the American Radio Relay League. Mexican hams conduct near-space radio experiment. A recently launched Mexican near-space cross-band repeater carried on a high-altitude balloon has been deemed an overwhelming success, according to a report on Amateur Radio Newsline. The SARSEM Icarus II Mexican Astrostatic Subspace Repeater System was launched by Amateur Radio Club of the state of Guanajuato in late 2010. It reached an altitude of 94,301 feet, during which time 103 contacts were made using the crossband repeater, flight controller said. Ground stations reported it having coverage of 551 miles across 13 states of Mexico. Newsline reported the balloon's payload included a UHF to VHF repeater, temperature and voltage sensors, flight computer, and a secondary backup system including GPS and control system. Also on board was a video camera transmitting live video back to the ground on 900 megahertz, it said. This was the second successful ham radio balloon flight for the club. A third flight is planned for this year. That information also came from Amateur Radio Newsline. Well, it's time for that editor's log. The editor again is Richard Fisher, KI6SN, Kilo India 6 Sierra November. Getting on the air? Question mark. Now, there's a novelty. A quotation. I have got to do this more often. Get on the air, that is. Close quote. CQ Amateur Radio Editor Rich Mawson, W2VU, wrote in Zero Bias, a CQ editorial in the magazine, May 2010 issue. His words hit me with the subtlety of a 20-meter pileup, and still do. Rich pointed out that with his day job devoted to reading and writing about ham radio, he often spends free time on other interests. Perfectly understandable. But getting on the air reminded him of why he, quoting, fell in love with ham radio to begin with, close quote, and why he's remained so enthused by it. It got me to thinking, how much do I get on the radio? A quick look at the 2010 KI6SN lugs show mini bursts of activity, but for the most part, I was a very occasional operator, sometimes a week or more between contacts. It's a painful admission and a pathetic display. In my case, no known cause. It just happens. For anyone who still gets a great thrill making every contact, especially on high-frequency HF, CW Morse code, and 2-meter FM simplex, I resolved for 2011 to be a lot more active. The logs will look much different this year. Just how persuasive is I don't get on the air enough syndrome. In December's World Radio Online Live online chat, we took a shot at answering the question. In an online poll, we asked, what is the primary activity you plan on doing more of in 2011? Well, unscientific for sure, but the choices and responses were interesting. Contesting, 7%. DX chasing, 4%. Digital modes, 21%. Home brewing, 14%. And improving antennas, 11%. Folks, just a note of clarification. Home brewing? No, that's not making beer or coffee in this case, or even wine. It's actually the ham speaker, amateur radio talk, for making your own equipment out of parts, spare parts, new parts, or kits, etc. There are a lot of those kinds of comments in this great hobby. People put funny names to funny but interesting and wonderful things and experiences. But the choice far and away getting the most votes was getting on the air in general, 43%. Seems there are a lot of radio amateurs suffering from I-gotta-s. I gotta do this, I gotta do that. Internet news groups and live chats, radio club meetings and repeater group breakfasts are all important to nourish the amateur radio community. But isn't there something to be said for experiencing the simple joy of talking on the air to another OM or YL, old man here, or young lady, man or woman, with a shared passion for amateur radio? I think we sometimes forget that. Take a moment to recall the great QSO, that's a two-way conversation. Prize DX, DX is distant out of United States contacts, a contact to complete an award or contest achievement. Rich has it right. Is this a great hobby or what? I really have to do this operating stuff more often. Me too. How about you? Here are a few other results from that December poll, midweek chat, coming in April. Would you participate in a World Radio Online live online chat on a weeknight? A whopping 82% of respondents said they would. Then we followed with, if WRO were to schedule a weeknight live online chat, what evening would you prefer? Wednesday was a clear winner with 38% of the vote. Monday got 5%, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday each got 19%. So, we scheduled a Wednesday evening WRO live online chat at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on April 13. That's 0100 UTC, Universal Time Constant, Thursday, April 13. How about a chat at about 1200 Zulu on a Saturday or Sunday every now and then? Asked Steve Fletcher, G4GXL, from Norfolk, England. Quoting, we may get some more chat participants from Europe. A great idea, and we'll plan on doing that soon. We'll pick a kickoff time, and that will be good for chats on both sides of the pond. Are you planning to take part in the ARRL 10-meter contest? More than half, 53%, said no, while 33% said yes. There were 13% who weren't sure. Wonder if lousy HF propagation is throwing a wet blanket on 10-meter enthusiasm. If so, how sad. Folks, here's another comment from Bob, your reader. I don't often slow down to explain different letterings and different phrases, but sometimes it just has to be said. You notice I slow down once in a while with these different acronyms, DX. Well, what does that mean? Well, I just said it very quickly, but it's making contacts outside of the continental United States with any other state or nation in the world. And then there's this universal time constant. I'd venture to take a guess most of you really don't know what that means. Well, actually, think back 40, 50, 60 years ago, let's say World War II. That's a long time, huh? That's what we used to call military time, or Zulu time. It's actually the time at Greenwich, England. That's where the world clock is set by the Greenwich Observatory in England. Editor Fisher concludes, if you want to join us on the web, here's how. The WRO World Radio Online live online chat schedule is shaping up Sundays, February 6 and March 6. We'll hold our first midweek session on Wednesday, April 13 as well. They all begin at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And here comes that universal time constant again. 8 p.m. Eastern Time is 5 hours different from 0100 UTC at Greenwich, England, which to the British, it's already the next day. I hope you're not too confused, but that's the way it works. And our casual friendly affairs. If you'd really like to get involved in that, whether you're a ham radio operator or not, is not required. You don't have to be. You can go to this website. I try to avoid giving you long websites, and I can understand why that's a little difficult for many of you who listen to this service. http://www.worldradioonline.blogspot.com. www.worldradioonline.blogspot.com. You have to do that to sign up for an email reminder that the chat is coming. You can see replays of all previous chats on the website as well. Signed, Richard Fisher, KI6SN. Just a few months ago, folks, I was reading the news piece from Richard Fisher. And in that piece, I commented too, I sort of explained what this thing about home brewing is about. But that's also applicable in the thinking process to when you get any kind of new equipment from a manufacturer, whatever the kind of equipment is that you think is going to advance your operational abilities in ham radio. So here's the perfect article to start out with today in the features, with the Handy Hams. Reading the manual can be a challenge for the blind operator. The author is Pat Tice, Patrick Tice. Call Whiskey Alpha Zero Tango Delta Alpha, WA0TDA. Read the manual. How many times have you heard that advice? Oh, sure. We all want to dig into the box, toss the packing material aside, connect the new rig, and get on the air. Who wants to take the time to read the instruction manual? Let's go. Of course, a few minutes later, humbled by the new rig's menu system, we have to reluctantly dig back into that pile of packaging material and find the instruction manual. Yes, these days it really does pay to take a few minutes to check out the instruction manual and at least find the part labeled Getting Started or Quick Start Guide. Almost every new piece of equipment will have default settings that we will want to change, and checking the manual will actually prove to be a time saver. So while reading the manual may be an inconvenience for most of us, what is the blind amateur radio operator supposed to do? There's the radio, sitting on the desk. The blind operator can get a sense of what the radio feels like, paying attention to the front panel controls and the points of connection on the rear panel. What all of these things actually connect to or control? Well, that's all described in the manual, and the blind operator can't see it. There are a couple of ways to approach this problem if you are a blind ham. The traditional one is to have a sighted person, usually a spouse, with a lot of patience help you read through the print manual and cover at least the Getting Started section and the diagrams of the front and rear panel layouts. It is difficult to get around this part of the manual without having sighted help. But if the radio is similar to a previous model by the same manufacturer, the blind operator may have a leg up on understanding the layout of the controls and connectors. Another option is the PDF version of the manual, which may be downloaded from a manufacturer's website. Nearly all new PDF manuals these days contain embedded text, plain computer text that can be picked up and read by a screen reading software program used by a blind person. Theoretically, This accessibility feature in a PDF manual can give a blind operator access to the instruction manual, but there is a catch. Diagrams are still not accessible to a blind operator using a screen reading program. The text embedded in a PDF can be thought of more or less as a plain text file. The reason manufacturers use diagrams in a manual is because the diagram is the easiest, fastest, and most intuitive way to show what is in which position on the front panel of the radio. The various controls can be labeled, and the sighted operator can see at a glance where the noise blanker or audio gain controls are in relation to each other. Since the diagram does not convert to plain text, the blind operator cannot make use of the diagram at all. Another problem with PDF instruction manuals is that some of the text may end up out of context. This can happen when there is some text accompanying a picture or a diagram, or perhaps in a sidebar on the page, and it gets mixed in with the main body text on the page. Even though the embedded text in the PDF instruction manual is a wonderful reference tool for a blind operator using the search field in a PDF reader, this format is still not absolutely the best way to learn the radio right out of the box. As I mentioned, a sighted person is generally required at the outset to explain the most basic front and rear panel diagrams. Once a blind operator has learned these basics about the radio, the PDF instruction manual now becomes a useful reference tool. Menu item settings may be too numerous to commit to memory, and a search of the text in the PDF manual can provide a quick link to the explanation of a given menu item. The embedded text in PDF has thus proven to be a huge advancement in accessibility for people with disabilities. And every blind amateur radio operator should have a library of PDF instruction manuals for all the equipment in the ham shack. In the early days of PDF, there was no embedded text. It is still possible to produce PDF without embedded text, so it is not a certainty that every PDF manual one can find online contains text accessible to a blind operator. Older manuals that have been scanned as an image are one example. Fortunately, the default method of saving to PDF these days seems to be with embedded and thus blind accessible text. If you produce an amateur radio document yourself and want to share it on the internet in PDF, be sure that you have the right option selected for saving with embedded text. In most cases, you will have to make no change at all to your PDF production program since accessibility will be enabled by default. If you scan a document with both text and diagrams, your scanning software may include the option to save as PDF without text embedded or PDF with text embedded. Be sure to choose the second option to make your document accessible to blind users. There are many examples of accessible PDF amateur radio documents online. In fact, World Radio Online magazine is one example of a PDF with embedded accessible text. You can check for accessible text by opening your latest copy of WRO, then placing the computer cursor in a text area. Click and hold the left mouse button and drag the cursor over the text. If it can be selected, it has embedded text. And as a side, folks, this is Bob again. That's exactly what I'm reading from, is a PDF document which I downloaded, the entire magazine online, just yesterday afternoon so I could read it to you today. Next, use your copy of WRO to practice search for a term. Open your issue with your PDF reading software, then use the Control key and the letter F at the same time. This places a cursor into the search box. Type in the word STERBA, STERBA, and press the Enter key. The first thing you will likely find is Kurt, that's a man's name, KURTN, STERBA, in the list of contributing editors. Remember, we're talking about this particular issue, folks, in this illustration. press the Enter key again, and you will most likely find the Aerials column. Now you know how a blind person searches a PDF document, and you can save time by using this keyboard shortcut yourself. If your club newsletter or a description of an amateur radio construction project goes online, be sure to consider providing the embedded text if you are using PDF. It's easy to do, and blind operators will really appreciate being able to access the document themselves with their screen reading computers. Want to learn more about Handy Hams? Check out www.handyham.org or contact us at the following address: Courage Center Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, MN 55422. Toll-free number 1-866-426-3442. That's 1-866-426-3442. Online, if you have capabilities there, type in all lowercase, one word, ham radio, at one word, couragecenter.org. Ham radio at couragecenter.org. So our thanks again to Patrick Tice, WA0TDA, with the Handy Hams. Well, let's take a peek now at amateur satellites. NA1SS, November Alpha 1, Sierra Sierra. Welcome aboard the International Space Station. The author here, Terry Dodds, T-O-U-D-S, call N8KI. First, a belated happy 2011. If this year continues at the pace 2010 ended with, we're in for another great ride with the birds. So let's get to it. Don't miss this. Here is a must-see video for those who have contacted the ISS on 2 meters, International Space Station, or tried to. Project engineer for ARISS, Kenneth Ranson, call N5VHO, posted a wonderful video from NASA TV showing Expedition 25 Commander Doug Wheelock, KF5BOC, using NA1SS aboard the ISS. After taking viewers on a tour of the ISS, Wheelock puts the station on the air, talking to U.S. radio amateurs, beginning at the 11-minute, 30-second point of 20-plus-minute video. It gives the viewer a great example of the pileups that happen in space from the United States, with many people trying to contact the space station. While we're on the topic, there have been many exciting things happening aboard the ISS. NASA has approved the use of the original ARISS VHF and UHF Ericsson handheld radios housed in the Russian segment of the ISS to be used in the U.S. segment of the space station. When the Ericsson radios are installed in the Columbus module, it will become the second amateur radio station aboard the space station. The second station is planned to initially use the same frequencies currently used by the Kenwood D700 amateur radio transceiver aboard the ISS. Studies are underway to determine a compatible operating plan, which would allow both stations to operate simultaneously. Now, how about updates? ARISS at 1. At this writing in December, there was a lot going on with ARIS AT1. That actually means SAT-1, which, with luck, may be deployed by the time you're reading this. The satellites, it's plural because one is for the actual flight and one is a backup, had been sent from Orlando, Florida to the Johnson Space Center in Houston for a NASA safety review in October. The review was completed with the written safety presentation and the written hazard report being okayed, with only simple modifications required. The safety review was a two-day meeting running six-hour sessions October 13 and 14, 2010. The Russian Energy, a space agency, was handling the details to ship the satellite to Russia. A new Russian Orlan suit battery will be shipped to the International Space Station separately to be installed in the satellite on board. After the battery and an experiment from Kursk University are installed. The satellite was to be tested for flight and final safety review was scheduled. AMSAT North America's Lou McFadden, W5DID, and Mark Steiner, K3MS, were scheduled to travel to Russia to assist with final testing before the satellite was forwarded to the launch site. For those not familiar with the ARIS-SAT-1, it contains a mode UV, 70-centimeter uplink, 2-meter downlink, linear inverting, that's transmitting on lower sideband, receiving on upper sideband, transponder with a 16 kilohertz bandwidth. It can be worked with QRP transmitters and omnidirectional antennas, QRP transmitters. QRP means very, very low power, folks. It could be minuscule power, and yet it works in great long distances if used correctly. A CW beacon was included that will either send the call sign RS01S or the names of the developers. FM Audio sends voice telemetry and the RS01S call. An SSTV, single sideband television, is to be supported using the Robot 36 format. There are 24 voice greetings in 15 languages. I could repeat them here, but I won't. Done mostly by children, but there's a special one as well by former cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin, the first man in space. ARIS-SAT-1 was scheduled to be sent to the International Space Station aboard the Russian Progress Vehicle 41P in January and deployed during EVAR 28 this month. You too can go to Mars, you know. In the I Find This Really Interesting department, there was a note in the AMSAT news service concerning a website you can go to and send your name to Mars via the NASA microchip project. I tried it, and my name is going. Yours can too. And you'll receive a certificate like the one shown in this month's column. Now, this commentary continues for the young people interested in or already involved with amateur radio. FunCube, F-U-N-C-U-B-E, one word, FunCube project targets youth in United Kingdom. AMSAT UK's FunCube is an educational single CubeSat project with the goal of enthusing and educating young people about radio, space, physics, and electronics. The target audience consists of primary and secondary school pupils. FunCube will feature a 145 MHz telemetry beacon that will provide a strong signal for the students to receive. A simple receiver board, the FunCube dongle, is being developed as well. It is intended to be connected to the upper sideband port of a laptop to display telemetry and messages in an interesting way for the students. FunCube will carry a UHF to VHF linear transponder that will generate up to 1 watt and can be used by radio amateurs worldwide for single sideband and CW Morse code communications, measuring just 10 by 10 by 10 centimeters. And with a mass of less than 1 kilogram, it will be the smallest ever satellite to carry a linear transponder. And the choice of frequencies will enable radio amateurs to use their existing VO52, DO64, HO68, and other stations. Interested amateur satellite operators are invited to join the growing user group to follow all the latest with the FunCube and receive board and the FunCube dongle. Just another aside, folks, if you're trying to think to yourself, well, I don't know what centimeters and all that stuff means. If you took a regular basketball and put it in a corrugated box, sealed it, that's about the size of this fantastic little piece of electronic wizardry. It's sent up on rockets, and this happens quite a bit nowadays. While we are discussing student-built CubeSats, a short video has been posted that introduces the Firefly mission, a CubeSat built by undergraduate students with the partnership of Goddard Space Flight Center and the National Science Foundation. You can see that at the following website, http://, bit.ly/EEMB, uppercase X, number 1. That's it. As always, there is a lot to cover and barely enough room, so be watching for more in my next column. I hope to hear you soon on The Birds. Well, that's about amateur satellites. The author, Terry Dodds, call N8KI, November 8, Kilo, India. Well, it's time now to look at FISTS, F-I-S-T-S. This article is titled, After CW Testing Stopped, A Hard Look 4 Years Later. This article is by Randall Noon, N-O-O-N. Randy's call is KC0CCR. The official notice that CW testing would no longer be required to obtain an amateur operator's license in the United States was announced by the FCC on December 15, 2006. The last required CW tests were given in the 30-day period after the official announcement. A number of hopeful hams packed into some of the January 2007 testing sessions to have future bragging rights that they received their licenses by passing the 5-word-per-minute tests way back when it was required. I pause again for just a moment, folks, to tell you that CW, continuous wave, is what most people think of as Morse code, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- amateur radio, and for that matter, commercial and marine radio. Lots of predictions were made about what this would do to ham radio, some of them quite dire. Since it has now been 4 full years since official CW testing ceased, let's examine what the facts indicate has really happened. With respect to the total number of hams with licenses, the figures in one of the tables here show the number of licensed hams at the end of October in each year from 2005 to 2010. In the charts, the numbers varied from 2005 at over 664,000 to 2010, 695,000. Using October 2005 as the base year, there was a downward trend for 3 years from 2005 to 2007. Then the trend reversed in 2008 and has been upward in the past 3 years. In fact, more hams are currently licensed than at any time in the history of amateur radio in the United States. This is about 0.23% of the U.S. population. It does appear that the testing changes made in 2007 do correlate with an increase in the number of licensed hams. Who are they? Are these active hams or just hams who took the test and don't get on the air? To answer, I went to the data published by the American Radio Relay concerning field day statistics for the same period. The assumption is that people who participate in field day are at least minimally active hams. The data here indicates that the percentage of field day participants as compared to the total number of licensed hams each year dropped slightly, perhaps insignificantly, from 2005 to 2006. However, the percentage of field day participants as compared to the total number of licensed hams jumped in 2007 from 4.98% in 2005 to 5.31% in 2007. This is a 6.6% increase. Since 2007, the higher level of field day participation has stayed at this level. While there were 4.6% more licensed hams in 2010 than 2005, participation in Field Day in 2010 was 9% higher than Field Day 2005. Thus, Field Day participation has not increased just because the number of hams has increased. More hams now participate in Field Day activities, both in absolute numbers and as a percentage of the total number of licensed hams, than ever before. And the data indicates the change occurred in 2007. So, just what is going on? The numbers indicate that while both CW and phone, QSOs, have increased in absolute numbers, phone again is voice, as a percentage of each year's QSOs, they both have slightly declined due to the corresponding rise in digital QSOs. In other words, as a percentage of the total number of QSOs digital, is stealing an equal share of the pie from both CW Morse code and phone voice. The absolute number of digital QSOs in 2010 was 92.4% greater than 2005. In short, CW usage among hams, as measured by field day usage, has not dropped since testing ceased in 2007. In fact, it appears that the use of CW has gained an absolute usage because the newer hams licensed since 2007 appear to be more actively engaged in the hobby, as evidenced by the high levels of participation in field day. The numbers indicate that the end of CW testing did not herald the end of CW, as was predicted by some. But then again, this should have been expected. CW has not been used by hams just because there was a test. It has been used because it has been, and continues to be, a useful mode of wireless communications. And we'll conclude with an interesting announcement. The Winter Sprint, sponsored by Fists, will run from 1700 UTC to 2100 UTC on Saturday, February 12th. Sprints are fun and do not require the marathon-level endurance or the predatory pile-up instincts of a wolverine to win, place, or show. It's just 4 hours of hanging out with radio buddies and making CW contacts. Operation is on the 3.5, 7, 14, 21, and 28 megahertz amateur bands, and an operator may work stations only once per band. Contacting the same operator on several bands, however, is just fine. There are three operating classes, 5 to 100 watts, 5 watts or less, and clubs, any power. A person does not have to be a FISTS member to participate. Let's take a look now at hamfests and special events for February. Washington, Pennsylvania, special event station W3C Whiskey 3 Charlie at the Washington County Sportsman's Show, February 3 through 6 at the Washington Crown Center Mall for the 11th year. Must be a very popular take. Hatillo, Puerto Rico. The Caribbean Amateur Radio Club from Hatillo, Puerto Rico will be sponsoring the Great Ham Fest of the North on Sunday, February 6 at the Hatillo Municipal Coliseum, Hatillo, Puerto Rico, from 0800 to 1400 hours, universal time constant. This event is free and open to the public. There will be FCC walk-in exams by W4VEC, vendors, door prizes, used equipment sales, and conferences. An interesting take on the Great Island. Kent, Ohio. FYAO Special Event QRP Station K8BF Kilowatt Bravo Foxtrot, February 19, 1500 to 2300 UTC during the 6th annual Freeze Your Acorns Off operating event, sponsored by the Portage County Amateur Radio Service. San Antonio, Texas. Siege Days at the Alamo Historic Commemoration, San Antonio, Texas. Call sign WA5DTK, Whiskey Alpha 5 Delta Tango Kilo, February 23rd through March the 6th. And back to Coal Country. Colchester, Vermont. HamCon, Vermont's amateur radio convention, sponsored by the Radio Amateurs of Northern Vermont, February 26th from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Hampton Inn Convention Center. That's right off of I-89 at exit 16 in Colchester, Vermont. Well, it's time to take a peek at promotion and recruitment. PR stands for public relations and personal relationships, by Devere D. Logan. Call W1-HEO. PR stands for public relations, but effective personal relationships are developed by people. Most of us were introduced to amateur radio by another person, and this personal touch remains one of the most effective ways to attract people to our great hobby and public service. So, here's to those people who truly put the P in the ham radio public relations. First, as we move through another year, let's salute the people in ham radio who have helped to increase our numbers. The fact is, by showing the growth of our radio service, we're sending a strong message to those in Washington, D.C., who regulate our radio service and control our future. Let's look at the record. During 2010, the number of amateur radio licenses in the United States grew by more than 694,000. That's quite a healthy increase over the 655,000 of 3 years ago. This didn't happen without a good deal of personal influence by ham radio people. Our hats are off to them for their fine efforts. This doesn't mean that promotional activities targeted at the general public aren't necessary. We need to use all available tools to communicate amateur radio and its value as a rewarding personal hobby and important public service. But turning awareness into a desire to learn more and possibly become a licensed ham is often a one-on-one activity. This crucial step is one of the major links in the chain of four key activities that are emphasized by the Ham Radio Promotion Project. Each of us has many opportunities to tell us about the many fun and exciting things we do as radio amateurs. Storytelling about our on-air experiences is a powerful word-of-mouth tool. Many successful businesses were built as a result of customers telling others about their experiences with good products or services, and it costs nothing. Reference to your radio activities are easily worked into casual conversations. For example, sharing some of the details of a shortwave contact with a fellow ham in another country can be interesting. You might subtly note that the ability to do this with your personal station at home isn't something you can do with a cell phone, and there's no monthly bill. This may intrigue the listener, who might even express interest in learning more about ham radio. Personal contacts with others who can benefit from an understanding of amateur radio's potential and pass this information along to their associates are another one-on-one word-of-mouth opportunity. Typical contacts include teachers, scout leaders, youth leaders, civic leaders, emergency preparedness groups, service clubs, fellow employees, and neighbors, to mention just a few. It helps to follow through on such contacts by offering further information. This may include literature, a showing of the promotional video Amateur Radio, Wireless Window to the World, or giving a presentation. Radio clubs can often help by supplying local contacts, training classes, and whatever. Despite the increasing popularity of the internet, traditional media deserves to be included when you distribute radio club news releases. Recent surveys show that the number one people's choice for local news is television, 64%, followed by newspapers and then the internet. Radio Club newsletters provide a variety of benefits. They announce meetings, programs, news of activities, and update readers on various happenings. Content is important, and so is good editing. Stick to the facts by using the journalistic style first paragraph that covers the who, what, where, when, and why. Good writing keeps things simple. Avoid needless words is the golden rule of writing. You might want to check the paperback book titled The Elements of Style by Shrunk and White for tips on good writing. Distribute your newsletter to area news outlets and civic leaders. It's a good way to maintain a link to those who should be aware of amateur radio's activities and benefit to the community. Devere D. Logan, W1HEO, is a veteran writer, public relations counselor. If you'd like to be in touch with D., you can send email, all lowercase, to his name, DevereLogan@gmail.com. I'll spell it out for you. DevereLogan@gmail, that's gmail.com. And before I run out of time, folks, our rules and regulation commentary super ham of the month is Dave Johnson, WA4DJ. That's Whiskey Alpha 4 Delta Juliet, president of the recently rejuvenated Shenandoah Valley, Virginia, Quarter Century Wireless Association Chapter Number 155. He's pictured here at the Berryville Hamfest. And we thank again John Johnson in the Rules and Regulations column that appears every month in the World Radio Online for his fine selection of Dave Johnson as the Super Ham of the Month. Well, for you folks looking for contests to listen to or participate in, I'll give you just a few. The 1010 International Winter Contest is at Zulu, 5 February through 2359, 6 February, 10 meters, single sideband only. The North American Sprint, that's Zulu to 0400 Zulu February 6th. It's 80, 40, 20 meters, CW. That CW keeps popping up, doesn't it, huh? The Asia Pacific Sprint contest is on 1100 to 1300 Zulu February 12th. That's 40 meters and 20 meters, CW. Well, let's take a look at aerials. We don't often talk about the aerials, which are such a vital part of getting out with amateur radio signals. Kurt digs up more of the skinny on Skin Effect, my Kurt and Sturba. In August 2010's aerials column, crusty old Kurt praised the Miracle Mixed Mode Dipole Antenna that a curious reader had asked about. But Kurt took a very dim view of the literature describing its operation. The antenna is just like Kurt's end-fed dipole, except that instead of a ferrite inductor, it has something called a current mode discriminator. Miracle's Robert Victor, V-A-2-E-R-Y, disagrees with Kurt's comments, and it is appropriate that we show his letter. Dear Kurt, I'm very pleased to see the good recommendation you gave our mixed-mode dipole antenna. It is doing very well for us commercially, and the unit I've installed on the roof of our plant has really pleased me with its performance. You take the time to slam some of our statements regarding the operation of the MMD, but I'm not surprised. What would a Kurt Sturba article be without a good solid slam at some antenna manufacturer's claim? But as someone who has built their reputation on exposing myths in both marketing and Hamden, I suggest you've fallen down badly on this one, in that you swallow wholesale that common mode currents on a feed line are kept separate from the feed current by Skin Effect. You cite the ARRL handbook's statements in this effect to back yourself up. Get out of the armchair, Kurt. Run to the library, fire up the internet, check the ARRL archives, scour the planet, find one single piece of experimental evidence that shows this theory is true. You won't, by the way. Sure, it's repeated in many quarters, stated as a fact from JA to PY, but that's not experimental proof, is it? Once you've found this out, set that pointed thinking cap of yours on your head and think about it. I believe, and I hope I'm not wrong, that you are smart enough to come to the same conclusion I have. Skin Effect plays no role in this scenario. It's just one more myth that hams, this time including you, have swallowed without blinking or thinking. This will be for you. Perhaps the first, and maybe only, occasion where the Mythbuster busts his own myth. But how about it? You're so set on taking apart others' baloney, do you have the brains and integrity to take apart your own? Let me give you a hint. Common mode RF is just as common as TX transmit systems, using balanced line as it is in the coax systems. But there's no coax shield, and that's no skin on a ladder line. So how would that happen if Skin Effect is needed to keep the currents separate as you parrot? This is only one of several errors in your article, but don't despair. I'll be happy to straighten you out on the rest once we've covered this one. Come on, Kurt. Drop the Wilford Brimley routine for 5 minutes and think for a change. I've looked forward to either one, your claim that everybody knows this so I won't waste my time, or two, this actually got me thinking, and now I have to admit that Victor might be right after all. So here Kurt responds, revelations from the library and the lab. Well, to start with, Kurt looked in his own library, and surprise, he quickly found reference to an article with experimental evidence. Experimental researches on skin effect in conductors in Transactions of the American Institute of Electrical Engineers in the year 1915. So we've known about skin effect for about 100 years. Most engineers take it as a given, just like Ohm's law. Coaxial cable designers use it to design the shields on their cables. Kurt's 1943 title Radio Engineer's Handbook explains in detail how to calculate skin effect for various types of conductors. So, is there current on the outside of the shield? Yes, Victor is correct. But how can Kurt say there isn't any? To see why, we need to look at skin effect in detail. With skin effect, AC current flows near the outside of a conductor instead of throughout the conductor as DC current does. Engineers have come up with a skin depth, DEPGH, the depth below the surface where current drops to 36.8% of its value at the surface. Why such an odd number? It's because the drop is exponential, and this is a good number in mathematical equations. Leave that to the mathematicians. What we need to know is that at one skin depth, the current is down to 36.8%. At two skin depths, it is down to 36.8% of that. At three skin depths, it's 36.8% of the value at two skin depths, and so on. It never drops to zero. It just gets extremely small. At seven skin depths, it is 1/1000th of the current inside the cable. For all practical purposes, there is no current on the outside. Being a practical man, Kurt says there isn't any. But it is easy to check this, so Kurt ran an experiment. The equipment is shown in the accompanying photograph, which we will not comment to. On the left is Kurt's venerable Drake T4XC transmitter, next to his 10-tech amplifier, followed by a Bird wattmeter. Then down below that on the cable is the Palomar Engineer's Clampon RF current meter. To the left of it, a 10-tech dummy load. On 20 meters, 150 watts of power went through this setup. Using Ohm's law for RG58 50 ohm cable, we find that there is 1.732 amperes or 1,732 milliamperes flowing into the cable. How much do we find on the outside? Answer, 2 milliamperes. Skin effect has cut the current down almost 1,000 to 1. Kurt's NFED dipole ignores this tiny bit of current, and it works just fine. So does Richard Fisher, KI6SN's trail-friendly NFED dipole, featured in his October 2010 trail-friendly radio column. So exactly what does VA2ERY's current mode discriminator do to this teeny little current that is useful to the antenna's operation? Not much. No, boys. Kurt welcomes questions of general interest from readers and will answer them in his column. Write to him at worldradioonline@gmail.com. World Radio Online is one word. @gmail.com. Ladies and gentlemen, that brings me just about over the time for this month's reading of World Radio Magazine, the online version. We've been reading together the February 2011 version of World Radio. World Radio is published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Hemp System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Hemp members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hemps may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyhem@courage.org. Handy Hemp for this purpose is always in lowercase one word. It's spelled H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M, Handy Hemp, at Courage, C-O-U-R-A-G-E.org. Our website, which is updated constantly, a very fine website with a tremendous amount of information and links and so forth to various other bits of information that anybody in the amateur community of radio hobbying would be interested in checking out. It's www.handyham.org. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. My location, Dartmouth, Massachusetts, 73. Thanks a lot for listening along again today.